You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Bigi on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in beautiful, sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent, beautiful planet, filled with clean water.
That's right. We're going to talk about that for sure. That's right. Right here on 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, there we also archive the shows under the on demand button. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is on each and every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Of course, we share all of that information on our social media pages, which, you know, Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and all those great things. And then you'll also see it on our website, which is sitamediainc.com. Of course, all the shows are downloadable, easily accessed. And on the website, you're able to search by topic or by person or by organization, and you'll be able to find the shows. And after 15 years, we've got quite a collection, a storyline of all of those shows that are on the website.
That's right. For our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, on Mondays from 1 to 2, Ellen O'Neill, my good friend, my right-hand person for this show, is here with me. We've been doing this show for 15 years. Our show is fun. It's very educational. We give out valuable information. And our goal here is to leave our planet a better place than we found it. In other words, we want to leave a good footprint behind on planet Earth. Ali Tambor comes with us. She sits with us and she just cheers us on most of the time.
Yes, I nod.
Danny runs our board. And we give people a platform here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, whether they want to talk about clean air, clean water, sunshine, shelter, homelessness, financial literacy, whatever your little heart desires. If you have the inclination to come and talk and get your word out and educate folks about what you're doing, we welcome you. We also stress that, you know, being on radio comes with a responsibility. Freedom of speech is not really free. You have to be very responsible with your voice. And so we've been doing this for 15 years, and by the grace of God, we have wonderful sponsors. Our sponsor today for the Florida Right to Clean Water is Cloud9 Sleep Shop. In front of Merritt Square Mall, which is great. And we've got two great guests today. A good friend of ours, a friend of the show, Yvonne Poeta, is supposed to call in from New York today. We know what happened last week. I'm not sure. Something happened and she didn't call in, but she wanted a chance to call back in. She texted me this morning. And then we have Mr. Tom Perez. Tom was referred to us by a good friend of ours, Ed, who was on the show before. And Ellen reminded me that he plays a flute. Which he does.
Jim DeRosa. Right. Yep.
And Jim.
Yeah, absolutely. He played a beautiful Native American flute for
That's
us.
That's right. And then our friend Melissa Martin, who's been on the show a few times. You know, it's amazing.
This has been a crusade. This Right to Clean Water piece has been a crusade for quite a few years now. And we're so blessed that they are advocates for us, as well as educating us on how to improve, and also how to get involved with our legislature, so that way we all do have the opportunity for right to clean
water. Right. And for our listeners, Mr. Tom Perez is the director for the East Central District, Florida District, representing seven counties, which includes the county we live in, Brevard, Indian River, Lake, Orange, Osceola, Seminole, and Volusia. And the organization is made up of county captains and ambassadors who help and coordinate and collect at this juncture, they're doing the state petition. So while we're waiting for Yvonne to call in, we're going to ask Mr. Tom to just introduce himself to our listeners and to tell us a little bit about yourself. Retired pharmacist, eh?
That's right. I'm a retired pharmacist. I retired, believe it or not, in 2008. And I'd like to make mention of something that was said a moment ago about this being a crusade. And that's probably as accurate as I've heard it put. Okay, this is a crusade, and it's a crusade that has taken many, many, many turns over the last, 5 years. Okay, in this area, there's been efforts in Orange County, in Brevard County Commission, Titusville as a charter amendment, and now we had an effort for the 2024 ballot, which was the first constitutional amendment that we tried. It failed because we didn't have enough petitions signed, and we resumed the effort again, starting from scratch, of course, for the 2026 campaign.
So what are the basics, Tom? Tell us a little bit, tell our listeners a little bit about basics, because when I turn on my faucet in the house, it seems clean, seems like clean water, right? So what is the, you know, tell the listeners about the crusade, about why it's so important that we be that we're focused on clean water, because it isn't just the clean stuff coming out of your faucet.
Right. Yeah, clean and clear can be deceiving. Okay. The devil's in the details. Mm-hmm. All water comes from the same place, literally. Okay. So whether it's an aquifer, whether it's the clouds, okay, whether it's recycled, it's all the same water. So when we talk about the right to clean water, it's the right of all waters to be protected, okay, not polluted. So that's a new definition, okay, for clean, not polluted. And this is one that legally, you know, lawyers try to make hay with, okay? It's not polluted. We don't measure clean. We measure pollution.
And pollution can be parts per million of hard water, as well as it could be the plastics that we wind up throwing away or that wind
PFAS,
up in our...
The endocrine right. disruptors are in the water.
Right.
All the many, 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 many things. I mean, after all, a kid's born nowadays, he's got 300 synthetics in their blood.
Right.
Before, you know.
And again, this is why, you know, we invited Tom on a show. I think we're just going to go with Tom for now. One of the as I was preparing for the show, I was thinking about how many people don't understand the mission of what the Florida Right to Clean Water people does. So can you tell our listeners, Mr. Perez, a little bit about the history of the Florida Right to Clean Water movement and how it came into existence?
Woo. Okay, that's a lot of history, but anyway.
Well, do what you can, because we don't have a lot of time.
Well,
the whole show we're not going to be worrying about the second call. So go ahead.
We can always double back.
That's right.
Okay, so what I was hoping to do, okay, because of the issue of
time.
Just to make sure
don't
that at least
about
we
it
covered
at this point.
The
I think
basics.
I'm going to just give it to you guys.
Okay. I brought with me an article that was written by Mel Martin, who you all know.
Yes.
Okay. It's titled Florida's Enforcement Crisis, Why a Constitutional Right to Clean Water is the Only Way. And the reason I brought this with me is it was published a year ago in Florida Today. And it reported on the underpunishment of pollution in Florida. Okay, pointed to the findings reported by the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, otherwise known as PEER, that 34 years of Florida environmental enforcement data depict an enforcement program in crisis. Okay, well, what does that all mean? The report, by the way, ends with a quote, pouring money into infrastructure projects will not be enough to clean up Florida's dirty water and address other looming environmental crises. Now, to put it in perspective, we can't expect human nature or the nature of politics or profit making to change anytime soon. Okay, it is what it is. Currently, the law not only allows special interest influence, in policymaking. It protects what has grown to functionally become a right to pollute. There are already laws against water pollution on the books.
Okay. But they're not enforced.
Correct.
That's the problem.
Well, and then we have city municipalities.
And we have a lot of lobbyists in Tallahassee that certainly gets the ear of the politicians as well. We know with the sugar industry and things like that. We've seen it. I mean, when I ran for office in 2018, there was something that was drilled into my head as well, you know, about the lobbyists and stuff. But one of the things that you all are doing with the Florida Right to Clean Water is you're trying to get this amendment on for people to sign it. You have to get 900,000 signatures, did I read someplace?
Just short of that, yes.
Okay, why? So explain to our listeners, Mr. Perez, why so many? It was never that many signatures that was needed to get an amendment.
Yeah.
What happened that now we have to double up and get more volunteers and more people to sign?
That part of the history starts a couple of decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as far as, you know, what I know about it. In 2006, the legislature passed the requirement that even if you made it on the ballot, you would have to attain a 60% supermajority. Okay, so that's one. Two, the number of petitions required, as you stated, actually doubled from what it used to be. And the time frame with which you had to collect those petitions was literally halved, from 5 years to less than 2 years to collect that number of petitions. So yeah, this started way, way back. And now this last, what I call the nail in the coffin for groups like myself, which we tend to be kind of unique because we are totally grassroots.
And you're nonpartisan.
Well, the right to clean water is a nonpartisan issue.
Right.
But the important thing is that
it's important that we make sure that we're watching every city, municipality, as well as all of the laws that are coming up, because they are designed to protect. But why we're not following them, I don't get.
Well, because a lot of people, they talk, but they don't vote. Right. And a lot of people don't get involved. And we all know that if you want to talk about clean air, you want to talk about water, you want to talk about shelter, you want to talk about financial literacy, you want to talk about sending your kids to school with you know, enough teachers in the classroom and all that, it has to start in the home where you have discussions at home. You turn the tap on, you complain to the Melbourne City Department about the price of your water bill, but some people don't care what's happening. Do you have chlorine? If you want the chlorine, if you didn't. So they just let other people do it. And that's right. Where Tom and all of us volunteers come in handy, right? But what does the amendment do?
To pick up from where, you know, I left off, essentially those changes that occurred in those earlier time periods has led up to the fact that the legislature and the governor realized that they need to put this to rest. Meaning they need to make this so difficult that it won't be attempted by people by groups like mine. Now, you have other groups like marijuana. They have millions, tens of millions of dollars in order to fund those campaigns. And yet, last year, they didn't have the supermajority required. So all that money, okay. Our campaign, on the other hand, the 24 campaign, spent, I think, $54,000 in printing petitions, flyers, signs. That's where the money went. This one is really no different. The 2026, it's probably going to be less. But the point being is that this is totally volunteers, people that are taking their time from what they do, whether they work, whether they retired. It's part of their, you know, life. Mm-hmm. Taking part of their life literally from them.
And hopefully they've been impacted somehow so that they realize how the impact has changed their lives and how they can make it better for their families. Because I found, too, in organizations that when the citizens and when the volunteers have a direct impact or are directly impacted by something, then it makes a difference.
Yvonne. Well, for our listeners who are tuning in, we've got our friend Yvonne from New York. Yvonne, can you stay on the line a little bit with us while we finish this segment with Mr. Tom Perez?
Oh, sure. No worries.
You could listen in, or if you want to call back at around 1:35, you're more than welcome to. But I've got to finish this segment because we're so into it, and I think it's good for the New Yorkers to hear it as well. So, Mr. Perez, people are asking, how does this amendment, this petition affect me? You know, a lot of people want to know what we are doing as far as volunteers for the sick, the needy, water, air, whatever, homeless is. But then they still ask the question, how does it affect me? So can you tell our listeners why signing this petition is an important thing and how it affects their lives?
Well, the bottom line, we all need water. Clean water. Our bodies are over 70% water. Okay. Without water, we don't survive. Okay. And it has to be clean water. Okay. Because we all depend, not only us, our environment, which is who we are, our environment is dependent on clean water. So, you know, our volunteers understand that.
Right.
But we have a very small group, okay, of people that are doing this work. And unfortunately, now with the new law, it has had a chilling effect because of the requirements, the penalties, which I haven't even gotten into. People are reticent from, you know, doing something that they believe
in. Well, I know they said that if you sign a petition and you date it, it has to be turned in by certain people. I mean, you know, the state of Florida is making it very difficult for people to get petitions signed, whether it's for reproductive freedom, whether it was for clean air and water. What are you hearing when you talk to people who say, I can't take these petitions. I'm sorry. I don't think I'll be able to return it on time. Where do I return it? How do I return it? And do I get penalized if I turn it in to the wrong person?
Yeah. All those are legitimate issues that we're dealing with, and that's why we are where we are, okay? Petitions now have a 10-day limit within which, from signature, they have to be handed in to the supervisor of elections, okay? So that makes you into an all-time, literally you have to dedicate all your time, okay, to doing the work, and people don't have all the time to do the work, okay? So, for example, if I collected petitions at an event here in Brevard, there's a good chance that 10% of those petitions are going to be from out of county. I now have to take those petitions and make sure they get to the supervisor of elections in Volusia wherever,
right?
You know, on time. Otherwise, there are penalties. Okay, $50 per petition per day.
Over. This is why our show is so great for education. A lot of people don't know that. So I wonder, Mr. Perez, if people understand that the state of Florida in 1950, there were 2.8 million people. As of, you know, as I was researching for the show, we now have maybe 24 to 25 million people, maybe more. I'm not sure. That's a figure that I read, right? And with this explosion of new residents, there is a human impact on the water system.
Well, of course.
Yeah. Right?
Development alone, you know, especially irresponsible development.
Right.
You know, doesn't take into account low impact development development practices, you know, foliage, you know.
Drainage. Yeah, absolutely. The herbicides and all the stuff to make. You know, everybody wants their grass to look beautiful.
Right.
And all manicured and beautiful and pristine, but it comes with a price.
Right. And huge price. And we were all told that the impact fees that the builders and developers are paying will go towards helping the Indian River Lagoon and water bodies here, different various water bodies, correct? But we're not seeing that in real life.
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Those impact fees have not been, you know, picked up by the developers. Current residents have pretty much had the burden of, you know, dealing with that. And a lot of our municipalities, unfortunately, don't keep up with, you know, their infrastructure. This is a chronic problem in Florida. So therefore, you have these monies going somewhere.
Yeah.
but it's not in protecting, you know, the community.
And what can we do as citizens of the state of Florida to enforce the right for clean and healthy water?
Well, first and foremost, get involved. Mm-hmm. You know, get out there, sign a petition. Our website is floridarighttocleanwater.org. We need literally 100 million people to step up, because we are no longer actively as ambassadors going out and collecting petitions, because we can't. The new law has literally tied our hands in the sense that we cannot abide by it in order, you know, and not break the law while we're doing it.
Right.
Okay, the 10-day rule is just one of them. Right now, people that collect petitions like myself have to register with the state, which means being trained, taking a test, and then we can go out and collect as many petitions as we want. But as I said, you know, we have a very small base, so when you ask people to do extra things,
it's time, money, it's an effort.
The new petition now for registered collectors has their name, their address, you know, personal information that most people don't want to disclose. And that is complementing the so-called personal petition, which you can get off our website also. And that one you send directly to the supervisor of elections, and we provide all that information, you know, on the website to be able to do that.
Right, and I think one of the things you all do, you want to educate people. You want to teach them about the petitions. You want to teach them to weigh the risk and the outcome of the people getting involved in their campaign for healthy water against the politicians who allow people to pollute our waters, mm-hmm. the lobbyists in Tallahassee. Yeah. And when you educate people and they get that aha moment, a watershed moment, then maybe they would say, well, yeah, I need to get involved. I need to sign a petition. Maybe I ought to volunteer. Yeah. Do you have a website for them that they could go on the website and sign up to be a volunteer or answer? I saw there's an area where you could answer a lot of questions as well if you want to learn more about the petitions.
Yeah, that's the floridarighttocleanwater.org. And since I talked about the personal use petition, individuals can actually collect 25 petitions, and that excludes their immediate family, and submit them to the supervisor of elections without any problems. Okay, but if you're going to be a collector, registered collector, then you have to go through that process that I mentioned, yeah. registering.
Yeah, and I wonder if people, you know, like when you, I mean, I come from, I was born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago, right? Mm. And I remember having rain barrels. Mm. My mother had a spout and the rain barrels, and we used that water to brush our teeth, take a shower, whatever. But we also learned at a very early age how to recycle and reuse that water.
Precious.
That if you, yes, that if you take a shower, you could use a bucket and a cup, mm-hmm. right? And my dad was very resourceful. He would take a nail and puncture a few holes in the bottom of the cup so you had the feel of a shower, right? So here in America, what I see is people don't think twice about flushing a toilet three or four times. They don't think about it. They don't think about turning the tap off when they brush their teeth because the water is coming. They don't give a thought behind where that water is coming from and who, like Mr. Perez, is fighting for it, right? So how do we get more people educated that recycle and reuse is not just something on the back of a truck. Mm-hmm. It is something that you ought to think about every single day when you wake up.
Yeah, yeah. There are many similar points like the one you're making, okay, that people need to be conscious of, okay? But, of course, it takes education and it takes, you know, a mindset that you're trying to improve, okay, not only yourself but those, you know, your community. Okay, and you mentioned earlier about, you know, how people don't read as much as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's something that you have to want to do in order to better yourself. And this is no different. You want to educate yourself about what's going on in your state, your government, in order to have a sense of what you can do about it.
Well, you want to belong, right? You want to be part of what's going on.
Yeah. So the identifier, and I just want to put this out there too, because we've talked about the water conservation before. We've talked about cleanliness, but this is right off the website. The proof of dysfunction, you know, really when we say, is our water clean and are we polluting our water? You can actually see it in algae blooms, and you can see it in toxic contamination, and where they find coli in our water systems and so forth. And when, you know, it's not like a water main break necessarily where they tell you to boil water. This is the water that it's coming from, like the original water. So a clear, simple legal solution is what we, and this particular amendment is supposed to be self-executing, so that at any point in that amendment, at any point, if a citizen feels like they're being discriminated against or they're being, or their water's getting polluted, they can actually file a suit against those governing bodies. So the people that are up in Titusville or up in, you know, where the cruise ships are, they have the opportunity to do something about it.
And we just want to tell our listeners who we're speaking with right now, we're speaking with Mr. Tom Perez, and he's the director of the East Central Florida District, representing 7 counties, Brevard, Indian River, Lake Orange, Osceola, Seminole, and Volusia. And our main goal today on our show is to talk about the constitutional amendment for Floridians to have the right to clean and healthy waters. And Tom is here to tell our listeners, which I'm so grateful that Yvonne Poeta is listening from New York. She's a poet, world-renowned poet, and she'll be joining us in a little bit. And maybe she could talk about this in a poem and write something for us in New York while listening. Uh-huh. Right, Yvonne? You're getting all of that. So hold on a second. So, Tom, give our listeners one more time the website where they can download this petition, because, as we know, everybody have a constitutional right to clean water.
Yeah. It is FloridaRightToCleanWater.org. And by the way, New York is the third state in the country that has actually passed its own right to clean water constitutional. So I congratulate them on that.
Yes.
That was done in 21.
You know, one of the things here in Florida, Tom, you know, the futility of some of us that we watch what's going on with politics. A lot of people, they get turned off when they hear things like this, where the politicians are more in the pockets of the lobbyists and the big companies, right?
Here's something you can do about it. Yeah.
People get exhausted having to fight such issues as clean air, clean water, mm-hmm. and shelter. So what can you tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends that don't get disheartened? Either way, how you feel about it, you still have to stay engaged and get involved.
Yeah, yeah. And I like to address that actually by picking up where I left off, because it brings to focus what the problem is and that we can actually do something about this, okay? And that is, you know, I had mentioned that there are already laws against water pollution on the books. Once an agency gives the thumbs up to a developer, for example, they can go and legally pollute as much as they want. Once a permit is issued, that's it, okay? It's the state agencies, as noted in that peer report I referred to earlier, that have failed to hold their ground against political pressures and other forces intent on placing polluters' interests above us and our waters. It's the system itself we need to attack, not the people. Every business is run by human beings, and every public official is a natural person with a family with basic needs like being able to drink clean water.
Right. So when you educate people, this is what happens. If we have more volunteers, like you said, and more people to talk about it, then just maybe that small business owner, maybe that person at home, they would think before they do things. Mm-hmm. Because if our goal is to leave the planet a better place than we found it, everything starts with education, right?
Yeah.
And what I see here is people just don't get involved. They talk about it. But then you go to a bar, for example, and you see people with glass after glass after glass with the ice, with the water, and you're thinking to yourself, you walk away and there's 11 or 12 full glasses of water left on the table. I know in California, when I went there, we had to pay for the water. you think twice about getting 11 big jugs of water and walking away from it. I don't think people care. How do you get them to that point where they say, this is our resources, we have to care?
Education, you know, which we've talked about before. The right to clean water constitutionalizes the idea that Floridians equal power when it comes to our waters. So the constitutional amendment is the one thing that's going to make it possible for us to fight back, okay? In addition to the obvious good it would bring to our aquatic ecosystems, a constitutional right to clean water also provides the necessary systemic fix, political cover. Every agency head, even the foxy ones, have a bigger boss.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of people still think water is an element, but water is actually a compound. You're a pharmacist.
It's a molecule.
Molecule. I looked into all that on my way here, and I'm like, oh my God, there's so much you could talk about with water. Because you just say water, but you don't think about the molecules. You don't think about the water in that way.
There are horses that are...
And in Hinduism, you know, when we do our prayers, we have to have the elements of water and fire and all that right there. And you think about these things, and they tell you all the time, water. Without water, there's no life.
Exactly.
Right?
We are the environment.
Right. I guess we could end on that note. We're going, Ellen, if you want to take this away, and then we'll go to Yvonne in the next few minutes, and Tom would stay with us. I'm sure he would jump in too.
Yes, and I want to make sure that everyone knows, right, FloridaRightToCleanWater.org is the website. They have a very, very robust website, and you can contact them through that website or admin@FloridaRightToCleanWater.org. Please get involved. You can download the petition right off of there. And we're going to take a minute to listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9, that's cloud9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. Ellen, just give the dial
That's
for
right,
that.
1510 WWBC. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices.
That's right. So I have a PSA to give. We, as everybody know, I guess the whole world knows now, I was born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago, part of the beautiful Caribbean. And we have a group out here that's called the Brevard Caribbean Association, Brevard Caribbean Sports and Cultural Association. And we're going to be having a black tie event. It's called a Black and White Affair on October 3rd, 2025, and it's going to be at the Grand Manor right here from 7 p.m. to 12 a.m. It's $125 per person, $240 per couple if you reserve now. You can go on the website and you can get the information there how to reserve your tickets. If you have any questions about that, you can also call me, and everybody knows me. I can help you with that. The Bacasca website is bcascaflorida.com, and you can reserve your tickets there. I will be attending, but I am not purchasing a table this year. It's too much trouble to get people to pay you when you buy a whole ticket table. I think you ladies could understand that, right, Ellen?
Yes, ma'am.
Right. Yeah. And you, Allie, and you, Tom, you understand that when you buy a whole table and then people say, I'm going to give you the $200, but they don't. And then you end up with all these extra tickets and you have paid for. So I'm not going to buy a whole table, just two tickets. But anyway, on that nice note, we're going to go right to Yvonne. Yvonne was supposed to call in last week on our show, and I'm not sure what happened, but she is an educator, an administrator, a producer, an artist. And she was born, like me, to immigrant parents from Peru, Yvonne Sotomayor. And she's on the phone calling in from New York to talk to us a little bit about her published works, her spoken word performances, studio recordings, poetry videos, music videos here in the United States and internationally. And we'll let her talk a little bit about herself. And I'm glad that she's bilingual because a lot of people need to hear all these wonderful things, not just in English, but also in Spanish and any other language for that reason. So, Yvonne, take it away.
Hi. Hello, everybody. Thank you for rescheduling. This is, I truly appreciate it. It was a personal matter, and thankfully, it turned out to be a false alarm.
Yes.
That's all I'll say, and everyone's okay.
Oh,
so
everyone's
fine.
So Yvonne, you are the first for everything in your family, educator, administrator. You made your family proud, and you're like any immigrant. Your mother and father gave so much, so many sacrifices were made for you to attend college and be where you are today. Talk to our listeners a little bit about the life of an immigrant child. And it broke my heart because some of the things you talk about being ostracized and racism and all that, it's happening in today's world as well.
Yes, and it's actually a little too blatant and a little too much allowed, which is the scary part as well. So I am the oldest of three children. Like you said, my parents are from Peru.
You say it better than I do. Peru. Tom, you could say that too.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Claro.
So honestly, my mom has a high school background and she went right to work. She unfortunately couldn't go to night school. She couldn't handle it, honestly. And in a few conversations she and I've had, she did say, "You're strong, Yvonne. I'm amazed that you could do that." You know, and I had no idea that was something that she even wanted to do, which is go to night school while she worked during the day. But the trips were too long, it was too much, and so she had to just go to work. Interestingly enough, the college thing was my idea, and she wasn't very supportive in the beginning. Which you would think, you know, as an immigrant parent, you come in, you come here and you want the best for your child, what you couldn't have. But I think she couldn't understand. And I think she was just raised in a way, it's let's be practical. You got your education, your bare minimum. Let's go to work. We need to, you know, feed the house, feed the family. We have to pay rent or whatever. So she started that with me, which I was really disappointed. I was really hurt because I would think, you know, my mom, a female, but I just don't think she could understand what that meant in the big picture. Later on, at my graduation and afterwards is when she came around and said, "Wow, I didn't know you could do it. I didn't think you could do that." So,
and you have three degrees, not one. But, you have 3 degrees. So she had to go to three graduations.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I'm always thinking of the backup, right? Maybe I don't want to be a classroom teacher all the time, an ESL bilingual teacher. So I thought admin would be something, you know, in my later years to segue into. And I did get to work for a grant and try that out. And it was fulfilling. I got to use my writing skills in a different way, besides poetry. And it was really interesting to work with the state and even the federal government in writing grants for minorities to attend college. So that was the full circle for that, for a Title V grant that I was hired through the college that I attended, you know, undergrad and then graduate. So it was, it's mind-blowing sometimes to think about it. And now to tell you the story, it's like, wow, that was a big full circle.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And and your career have taken you to so many places. You're very supported by your husband, Mr. Ken Rowell. He's a veteran. And you also, you performed at the Jimmy Carter Presidential Library in Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah, you've done some interesting things, and you also produced
Kentucky State Fair twice.
Yeah, the Neil deGrasse Tyson special on ABC TV.
God, that was awesome. Mm-hmm.
Bill Murray. Look at you, yes, Bill Murray, and God, you're doing a lot of stuff. Now, since the last time you came on the show, I read that something happened and you were influenced by the recent Coldplay release. What happened? Was it that picture with the two people, or was it something else?
No. I was reading about it again in between, you know, work, you know, tasks. I like to read, and I'm, you know, curious in what's going on, and not just music and the arts, but also science, which is why Neil deGrasse Tyson was an amazing experience. He's like a personal hero, and just an aside for that moment. I co-produced a segment at CUNY TV on debunking or de-planeting Pluto, which I was very upset because I grew up 9 planets. Pluto was one of them. I attended his speech at the planetarium in the city, and we, you know, came up with the idea of, let's talk to this guy. Why did he do that? And I met him, and he's just absolutely down-to-earth, brilliant. So affable. I mean, doesn't speak over you. He speaks to you. It's an incredible brain. We talked about art, and then he said, hey, I have a 4 million year old asteroid. Would you like to hold it? Oh. And I did. And that forever in my life, Mr. deGrasse Tyson, thank you. This was like over a decade ago, but it was incredible. I held a piece of space, and there you go. So anyway, that aside and connected, I was reading that Coldplay had released a new album. I think it's the album, the name is Moon Music. So I was fascinated because, again, I love space, right? So Moon Music, I'm like, well, is there moon poetry? I want to do it.
I knew it. And so how did I know you were gonna say stop picking on Pluto?
Yes, and so I wrote a poem to the moon, and I have it here if you'd like to hear it.
In a minute, but I mean, Mr. Perez is listening here, and I he's fascinated, sure. Just like Allie and Ellen and I. I'm so glad you finally got to call him. But you know, it's intriguing that your videos have been aired all over the world, and you have a huge following in Australia, I heard.
Australia, where else? Kosovo, through Pristina Press. I've also published Steel Notes by Susan Alexis Steele, and also New York Waste, who gave me my first opportunity to publish in a punk rock newspaper in Spanish and English, by Mr. Glenn Wernick and Lucky Lawler, who are friends of ours. And yeah, that was a great opportunity. Mm-hmm. But yes, I have videos, poetry videos on YouTube, on Facebook I share. And one of the other countries, and this was way in the beginning, which again, it was about 10 years ago, that a lady wrote back to me from Africa. And I wish I would have taken a snapshot or kept it. But she said to me, reading your poem or poetry, because I had more than one poem out, she said, now I feel like I can do this. I want to do this. That I could cry. It was just an incredible, incredible thing that my little words here, just, you know, through the suggestion and support of my husband, who said, You never know. Put it out there. You don't know who will be affected. That this woman all the way in Africa said, I read your words. They speak to me. I have words to say too.
Yeah, and it must be pretty challenging to write new pieces. Where do you get your inspiration from to write your new pieces, not just for the poems, but for the songs and everything else as well?
Sure. Well, it would be the news, which is interesting that you said, I forgot the gentleman's name that you were just speaking to about the water.
Mr. Tom Perez.
Mr. Perez, when you said, now you could write a poem about water, and I'm like, don't think I wasn't thinking about it. I'm listening to the segment, and I didn't realize I know how important water is, obviously, but how even our voices are being limited in terms of natural resources, in terms of for things that you would think like food, shelter, water, and being turned off by it, like you just said, it's difficult to stay on point. It is so painful to be aware of how we're being restricted. I just got my passport and passport card renewed. I feel a little safer now to leave my blue state. And that I was born here. Why should I feel like this? And these are rights that we take as a given, or, you know, supplies of nature that we take as a given. And it's like, no, not everyone has free water or running water.
Well, you know, you could write a poem about the way immigrants feel right now, even naturalized citizens such as myself.
Sure.
I always considered myself, you know, I'm from Trinidad. We're free. We're Soca people. Yep. You know, we speak English, whatever. You come to the U.S. and you assimilate and you blend in and you work hard, pay your taxes and do the right things. And then all of a sudden, I'm like you. I want to walk around with my passport sometimes.
Yep.
Because not only am I from the Caribbean, I'm Indian. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I have there's a lot of issues with black and brown people, especially people who are activists, who were active in women's rights and active in, like Mr. Perez, water, shelter, homelessness. We all of a sudden, there is such a silence from the activists that I know who were from Trinidad and Jamaica and India, especially Muslim immigrants. I'm watching and it's like people have decided if my skin is not white and I can't show that, I'm going to be quiet. And it's very sad that all of a sudden the privileges of race and culture and religion has popped its ugly head again, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. That now there's listing and registers, and it would be scary. It would deter me, to be very honest. And that's terrible. I feel terrible about that. I feel sad, but I'd also be afraid, because who's looking at this? What is this list for? You know. But I just want to speak on, you know, human rights. Everyone deserves human rights, safety, water, protections. You know, until you know you're innocent until proven guilty of whatever the situation is, but it is unprecedented. I, you know, even speaking with my mom sometimes, it's like, this is not the America that we, you know, she thought she was coming to.
Yeah.
People think they're escaping fascism or whatever you want to call it, these restrictions, racism and misogyny and everything, but Roe v. Wade. I never thought in my lifetime that I thought that was law. That was it. It's done. I didn't know that it could be taken back. It could be taken away.
Well, it's like men in suits being in charge of your reproductive systems.
Sure.
It shouldn't be that way, right? You shouldn't have the education to make those choices and decisions about your mind, body, and spirit, right? But, you know, I read somewhere that talking about going places and having your ID on you, you are such a free spirit that you drove cross country last spring to play to crowds, enthusiastic crowds in Colorado and Nevada and California, Arizona. You ran through blizzards and everything else in such mountainous places in the desert. And you weren't worried then, but now you are. Yeah.
You know what? I'm glad we did what we did. And that was a personal teenage dream to just have an RV and go across America, because I'm curious. I want to know people. I want to know landscapes. I want to know flavors, colors, sounds. And I'm so glad we did it last year, because let me tell you, Sita, if it was up to this year, I'd be afraid. I probably would think twice if we should do this. I hate to be like that, because it's like, I'm in my country. What is happening here, you know?
Yeah.
But that aside, I don't want to just keep it to an outrage. It was incredible. And the people I've met across the South, the North, whatever, you know what? They're accepting. They are curious. They may question you, but they are accepting. And they do enjoy someone who is, you know, honest and just trying to speak from a humane or humanitarian point of view, which I told them. When I have a poem about guns, but it's not because you shouldn't own your gun. You have your license, you have it for whatever reason. I'm talking about, you know, machine guns and things that it's only for authorities. And this happened with this gentleman in Tennessee, which this wasn't this go around, but that was the most interesting moment of my 31 states that I've been around in America. He just came to me and he just said, you know, I believe in the Second Amendment. I said, okay. I said, you know, I didn't write this about you. You seem, he goes, yeah, I have my license. I just have it for protection or for, you know, gaming or something. And we talked and we exchanged ideas. That's it. There's no screaming. There's no, you know, you're taking my rights. You're taking, no, it's just.
Well, wonderful things happen when you step. Well, you know, wonderful things happen when you step out of your comfort zone and you talk
yep.
to people, because then you realize that everybody wants the same things at the end of the day. Everybody wants to be loved and appreciated. They want to
yes.
fit in. And I know as an Indian person, you know, coming to America, mm-hmm. that's what I wanted too. I wanted to fit in. I want to be
female.
Yeah, exactly. And today, sometimes I do feel, I mean, I'm watching what's happening to your candidate for mayor, Zohran Mamdani in New York. And he is
right.
talking about buses for seniors who are mostly seniors ride those buses in New York. And people are against him for wanting the seniors to get a free bus pass. People, and I'm like, what happened to the crowd that used to say, you know, vote blue no matter who? It's like, because he's brown,
right?
Because he's Muslim. And it's so sad, because it shouldn't have to be that a person's color of their skin and their race and their religion should come into politics when that person has a good heart to represent the city. And that is making me nervous, you know? It is.
Sure. Because the message is getting lost.
Yeah, and I think that's a poem for God, you know, like when you get to God, you say, God, my dear, whether you call him Krishna or Buddha or Jesus or whatever, you say, why did you make us all so different if you knew it was going to cause such wars and chaos and loss of resources and lack of resources and stealing of land and resources? Why, my dear, did you do that? Because did you really create a heaven and hell, or did you put us in an area where, because we were different, we were treated mm-hmm. differently? I feel like I want to tell God that on a nightly basis and say, hey, what did you do?
What was your plan?
Yeah, why didn't you make every... I remember when I was a little girl, I said to my mother, I want to have white skin and corn-colored hair and blue eyes. And she said, well, it doesn't work that way.
So did I. I wanted the feather back hairstyle, you know, back in Charlie's Angels, and light eyes, and I could not straighten my hair, and I would cry. And then, I don't know if you are familiar with Facts of Life, that TV show.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the girls had like wavy hair, not curly, wavy. And I felt a relief because I saw a dark haired, wavy, you know, wavy haired girl on TV, and I stopped crying, stopped straightening my hair.
Because you identified with her. Well, we have 3 minutes
yes.
left of the segment.
Yes.
Irene, you're bilingual. You wrote a play, Radical Chica, and you liked that a lot in 2021. That was your first book of poetry, was it?
Album, spoken word, yeah.
Wow, yes. And that was well received, wasn't it?
I believe so. I'm hearing good things. I hope so. I hope it continues.
Give us the website where we can look at your videos, your poetry videos that are aired all over, and then we could learn a little bit about you there. And also, before you go, you're going to be running in the New York City Marathon again? You're returning to that?
I'm not running. I'll be performing.
What?
I can't run like that.
But you never know. You never know.
I'll be performing, yes. And also at Blank Fest, which is over in the Hudson House in Nyack on December 14th. And that is from noon till midnight as well. But yes, that's what I'll be doing. And you wanted my handle. So it's Yvonne, Y-V-O-N-N-E dot Poeta, P-O-E-T-A dot N-Y-C. And for that's for all my stuff on Instagram and Facebook. And for poetry videos, it's on YouTube. My first name, my last name, Yvonne Sotomayor. And all these videos will pop up. And hopefully some more new ones, too.
You have the last name of the judge. And every time we talk to you, I think about her as well. I'm sure you get that a lot.
I see
Ali. We have 30 seconds. Anybody want to jump in here? Anybody have a question? Tom, you have a question for her?
No, I'm also, I'm an immigrant also, which makes it kind of interesting that so many of us are.
Yeah. We have a lot in common. We're trying our best to assimilate and fit in. Ellen is the music buff amongst us. And Ellen, if you have anything to say to her.
Well, congratulations. That New York City Marathon is a great gig, and that should get you a lot of fantastic. I don't know if you've done that one before, but I've been up in Boston for the Boston Marathon before and was able to actually sing the national anthem.
Wow, that's
it was a cool thing, and I wasn't even a Boston resident.
Yeah, and so Ali was happy when you said about the wavy hair. Was it Mindy that had the wavy hair or Blair? I remember Facts of Life.
No, yeah, it was not Blair. It was the dark
Justine
hair.
Bateman. It was Justine
Tootsie.
Bateman.
Tootsie.
I say, I don't know. Giving away our age here.
I know, whatever.
But you know, I tell you what, your husband,
Tootie.
No, I don't know. But you.
No, not Tootie.
Hey, I want to give a shout out to your man there, Mr. Ken Rowell. I mean, he is such a gentleman.
Mr. Blank says.
Listen, when he called me to tell me that you were coming, that you were calling in on the show, what a loving, supportive husband you have right there, my friend. I was so amazed. And then he says, this is her husband. I guess you were singing or you were at a gig or something. And he just told you, he's like, she's going to call in. Don't worry. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give her another chance to call. He is. He loves you so much. And he supports everything you do.
Well, continue spreading the good word through your poetry. And I've done the blog as we're sitting here, so I've included all of your handles and all of the information so people can hear your podcast from your Spotify account and some other great things about you.
Beautiful. Danny said we have a minute. Can you run through a couple of lines of that poem you wanted to tell us really quick?
Oh, Moon Poetry. Okay.
Quickly, if you could do a minute. He's given me the eye, but I think it would be wonderful to hear that.
Here we go. The stories I tell the moon are secrets from my heart. Mistaken, misguided, and maligned. The moon doesn't judge. Drenched in your light, I am reborn every night. Cleansed from the day's dust, I long for your nocturnal blessing. I sit with the stillness, the chill of my skin. Inward, I find the girl that wants to glow with the world. Deep dive into reality, this they won't let be. So I surrender every sundown and extensively converse with Celine. She understands and knows, instinctively embraces my weary dreams, consoles the heavy sigh of disappointment, swiftly and softly taking me to the next level of slumber where I can calmly rest on modest stratus.
Are you sure you're not Hindu? Because in Hinduism, the moon is it. And so in Islam, too. I talk to my mother every night when I see a full moon.
Oh, that's so sweet. So last night was the harvest corn moon.
Yes, right? Because I would go outside and I pretend she's up there looking at me when it's bright. And I'm like, hey, Ma, it's me, Sita, and blah, blah, blah. So anyways, I just love you.
It's awesome. Well, once again, thank you, Yvonne, for calling in. And now you got me thinking of moon songs. And Tom Perez for
tuning in.
There's
no moon anybody on your way out.
I'll make sure. Tom Perez with the Florida Right to Clean Water. Please make sure you check out all of these websites and support our folks that come on the show and that are giving their all to their businesses as well as their foundations and the things that are making better life for all of us citizens. Thanks again for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll see you next week, 1510 WWBC.com. 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.